Chapter 5. Blessed are those who mourn, Part 3. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. We have now considered two of the states of being on the path, in connection with the Sermon on the Mount. To be able to live, he must, from breath to breath, breathe in the oxygen charged with poisonous miasma. In principle, he still undertakes to take leave of this sham. Of course, he is in and of this world. He can neither lie away or dream away this world and its laws. But in awareness of his poverty and his impotence, he lifts his head, knowing that there is also another world order. He goes on with a positive resolution pulsating through his bloodstream. I do not want to be of this world any longer. Then scoffers jeer, and those who are so intelligent by the standards of this nature shake their allegedly wise heads, mocking this strange brother who does not wish to conform and who will not let himself be swept along in the currents of nature. One takes him for a fool. Isn't he just that? He wants a world nobody knows and about which he himself knows nothing. How impractical. How senseless. He is a fool, maybe pure, but then a pure fool like Parsifal. Thus he is lectured and told to give up his silly ideas. Have you already had this experience? You cannot just quietly sneak away when you decide to take leave of this nature. It is as if the powers of the world conspire to single you out and deter you. Your adversaries mobilize, and sometimes they work through your own friends to keep you from departing. They make it very difficult for you, and then, out of this chaos of tensions and desperation, spiritual relief comes. The word from the mountain resounds, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." The fool, as he is called, is ignited in the light of Christ. By the grace of God, he makes a positive, first-hand binding with the realm of light, so long divined, but never seen. The pilgrim becomes a possessor. This is the first state of being upon the path of regeneration. The pupil has come to the source, and from it he freely draws the living water for nothing. And after this, for he still exists in this broken reality, will he be liberated? Yes and no. Through his binding with the light, he is now a blessed one, one who is liberated, but this eternity, this blessedness, he must be able to experience in time. This means that since the static divine order now has a focus established in dialectics by means of the pupil, this pupil is being used to break up and renew the degeneration in all its aspects, that through him and his co-workers, eternity may break into time, as a divine revolution which has to be carried out and fulfilled by human heads, human hearts, and human hands. Indeed, in accordance with the cosmic order, God does not interfere with his creation, but his desire is that his creation should shine and triumph through his creature. Therefore, as seen from a higher point of view, it is a most happy situation when the pupil comes to the first state of being, that of being in this world, but no longer of this world. However, be sure that you understand this expression correctly. For as soon as the pupil has consciously taken hold of eternity in time, a reversal takes place in him. The one who takes leave of this world and becomes a stranger to it will again come toward the world and plunge directly into its midst. As the driller and the blaster hack their way into the dark depths of a mine, so the pupil will break his way through the world about him, engrossed in his mission, which is to inherit the earth by means of the new goodness, truth, and justice. Eternity must be built in time, and this lower sphere of sunkenness must be cleansed, if our planetary cosmos is again to join harmoniously in the symphony of the stars. But alas, this work, begun in such boundless enthusiasm, is arduous and discouraging, and all but hopeless. The hands of the multitude cling to their worldly treasures, and when the knots are loosened, they cannot see, and if they can see, they cannot walk. The classical enemy always implants weeds in the freshly ploughed soil, and the mirrors of vision are distorted in such a way that they do not reflect the light, but only a caricature of it. The building threatens to fall. Cracks appear where the black forces batter its walls. The worker must be everywhere at once, and his attention is subtly and willfully diverted, in a very refined manner at times when the activity demands his whole being. It will then be seen whether the pupil actually carries blessedness in time as a possession in the blood. For when he is bowed down with sadness and dead tired and all but defeated, his earthly nature speaks, Man, do stop this. And the tempter whispers, people are yellow-livered dogs, murderers. Let them die on dung hills, bask in the light you possess. But the universal law of love of the distant kingdom also speaks, my brother, my sister, hold on despite your bitter suffering. This is the dilemma. This is the ordeal. The issue now is whether or not the law of love is alive as a positive possession in the blood of the pupil. Obeying a law always implies limitation, whereas being a law unto one's own self means freedom and self-authority. Let us suppose that the pupil solves his dilemma by making the resolution, I shall stand firm through all suffering, because the law of love has been fulfilled in me as a person. We might then inquire, how is it possible to hope for any further success now that the pupil has sacrificed himself on the altar of service, giving his potentialities and all his talents, without obtaining any liberating results? How can such a pupil overcome his grief? The second state of being on the path of regeneration will meet this dilemma. This state of being finds expression in the words, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Coming to a deadlock on the path of service, because dialectical nature by its essence denies the spirit, is met by the consolation sent forth from the distant realm of light. This consolation is the balm of Gilead, healing the wounds, bolstering the energy, supporting the task undertaken to a far greater extent than the balm gained through praying or thinking. This consolation is a Christ force, a many times increased vitality, transforming the pupil's weakness into an indomitable force. This consolation of blessedness opens up many new possibilities which will prove their glorious aspects upon the path of service. Only now the pupil is fully prepared. His purpose, his calling, now rests in time upon two pillars. Upon the two indestructible pillars of the true temple, the pillars of Boaz and Jachin. He has not received them gratuitously, no, he has had to build them from below upwards. It is true that while the trowel was being wielded, joyous song and laughter often rang out and the white building sprang up. But the building blocks were laid with mortar mixed with tears. And how often the structures had to be torn down because there were defects in the triangle and the plumb line revealed diverging lines. But now the sun has burst forth, suffusing the accomplished work. Truly, those who sow in tears will reap in gladness. They shall inherit the earth. Eternity shall triumph over time. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth.